We welcome you to another live edition of the Sports Box, brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And by our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and check them out at www.crowdplayapp.com for details. Ladies and gentlemen, it's showtime.
Hey everybody, welcome to Cage My IQ. I am your host, D-Bake, and joined as always on Thursdays is my buddy, Jim DeLulo. How's it going, Jim?
Hey man, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm hyped today because today we get to preview UFC Vegas 21, Beneil Muhammad versus Leon Edwards.
Yeah, it's going to be a big fight.
It is. It was supposed to be Leon Edwards versus Khamzat Chimaev, but with everything going on with Chimaev, he had to back out once again. And then as a warrior, Beneil Muhammad stepped right in. And I think this is going to make this fight even better because I have a good thoughts about Beneil Muhammad, which I'll get into when we preview the main event tonight. But as always, like I said, this is a Cage My IQ. You can follow us on Twitter at Cage IQ. You can follow us on Facebook at Cage My IQ SB and Instagram at Cage My IQ. And now, since Monday, you can follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/CageMyIQ. We're going to be doing a new thing every pay-per-view or every other pay-per-view where we'll be live streaming during the pay-per-view, where I'll have a few guests on where we'll give our predictions of each fight as they're going on and then just BS and talk money lines and just talk about life, you know, and then talk about who we think is going to win and then where we think the winner is going to go afterwards. It's going to be a cool thing to add to the Cage My IQ product. And then I'm just going to do it by ear. But if you guys could follow us on Twitch now at twitch.tv/CageMyIQ, if that's your thing going on Twitch, that'd be great. But also, I want to plug the Sports Box, which CageMyIQ has been a member of for the past 2 months. You can follow Sports Box and then just give them your questions and comments, and everybody will get back to you. Follow Sports Box on Facebook at Sports Box Show. You can follow them on Twitter at Sports Box Show and Instagram at The Sports Box Show. And subscribe on YouTube if you can. And then just support us. There's over 20 podcasts on the Sports Box brand. They're all good. We span all the way from, of course, Monday to Sunday. We're a tight-knit group, and then we support everybody. So if you could support us, that'd be great. And then if you want to tell everybody about the Active Geek and the handles you have for the Active Geek podcast.
Yeah, sure. It's very deceptive. It's Active Geek, but we talk about comics and movies and entertainment, trying to stay active in the fandom. Not a lot of sports, but you know, I'm a sporty guy, so I like to talk about that. But we're on Instagram, the Active Geek, and Twitter, Active Geek _. We're on SoundCloud, all the podcast directories every Wednesday.
Yep, which is fine. Like, I myself am a geek guy. It's always good to have another thing to be interested in other than sports, just like a change of pace. So I'm into that too. I listen to your guys' podcast every week. So I tell people they should do the same. Just check there below for their handles, subscribe to them, and then just support everything that both of us do. Yeah. But to get into the meat and potatoes of the podcast today, we got, of course, the UFC Vegas 21 preview. And the first fight that we have on here is a matchup, middleweight matchup between Eric Anders, who is 13-5 and is the +155 underdog, versus Darren Stewart, who's 12-6 and is the -180 favorite. How do you feel about this fight?
Yeah, this is a great matchup in the middleweight division. Both of these guys have knockout power with a combined 15 knockout wins between them. Anders has lost his last two, which in history has shown is not good for job security. and he's looking to bounce back and establish his name amongst contenders, where Stewart is also coming off of a loss to Kevin Holland and is also looking to bounce back. These guys match up so well, and I'm expecting this fight to be explosive. And this is my fight of the night, honestly, because this is the perfect matchup. They complement each other very well. Both of them are brawlers. Both of them like to keep the fight standing, which is fantastic. A lot of head hunting. Eric Anders is a big headhunter, where Stewart throws more leg kicks and body shots and implements them a little more into his striking routine. I'd like to see Anders shoot for a takedown a little bit more than usual. I know he's not a big wrestler, but to shoot for more takedowns would be great to kind of wear down Stewart. Because if you look at these guys, Eric Anders is going to come in bigger on fight day. He's going to make his weight, but he's always going to come in a little heavier afterwards. So I'd like to see him wear down Stewart and make it easier for the knockout. But I'm going to go with Anders in this one. I know he's the underdog, but I think this is going to be a turning point in his career where he can kind of get back on track.
Yeah, we got, for me, we got Eric Anders. He's fighting out of Spartan Fitness. And then you got Darren Stewart. He's fighting out of the MMA Clinic. First off, we got Eric Anders. His fighting resume shows that he has 8 wins by knockout, 1 by submission, and 4 by decision, which is a pretty nice resume right there. He also has 7 first-round finishes with 1 by submission and then 6 by knockout. So the normal way he gets wins is by knockout.
Yeah.
It puts on quite a bit of strikes, but takes on more than he dishes out. A good thing with him is his takedown defense is 80%. So most of the time he defends the takedown pretty well. And his striking defense is at 50%. So he has work to do with his striking defense, but at least with his takedown, which is good for this fight, that's top notch. Like, if it's not going to be perfect, 80% is like the next best thing. Whereas you got Darren Stewart, who his resume is 7 wins by knockout, 1 by submission, and 4 by decision. Almost, it's like almost just about the same thing as Anders. He also has 5 first round finishes with 1 by submission and 4 by knockout. Darren lands 1.5 more strikes a fight than he does absorbing. So he puts in more work than he takes on in return. So, which is good. You want to keep that ratio usually to 2-1. So you're not taking as much damage. And the one key thing with him is he averages 2 takedowns a night. It could improve his defense and striking defense, which needs to be improved. But with everything else, like, he's pretty solid. I see this going a little differently. Like, people are going to go with the Anders over Stewart, but I get the edge to Stewart just for the fact that the takedowns. I feel like he's going to get the takedowns early and often, and I feel like in this fight, it's going to be deceptive. I feel like he's going to get that started, but the way I have this is I have Darren Stewart by second round knockout. I feel like he's going to tire out Anders. Even with Anders' defense, Anders takes on more than he puts out, whereas Stewart, he puts out more than he takes on. So I feel like he's going to be more fresh because he's not getting hit as much as Anders is getting hit. Like, Anders is the more more precise striker, but when you're taking on more than you're hitting, that at times that's going to affect you in fights.
Absolutely. You know,
the name of the game is get your opponent. If you're hitting your opponent more than he's hitting you, the chances are you're going to be able to win the fight. And then that's how I see this. I see Darren Stewart going in, have his way, get a few takedowns, and then finish him in the second round. Okay. And then that's how I fear about this.
Yeah, I mean, even though both of their records are kind of identical, Stewart has more experience in MMA, where Anders has been, he was a football guy. He was University of Alabama for a while and then got into it later. So he's still kind of learning. And it's amazing he's racked up those 13 wins. I'm not mad at your choice. I mean, Stewart is a powerhouse. He's great. He got a split decision against Kevin Holland. A lot of people think that he actually won that fight. And Kevin Holland was on a tear in 2020. So I wouldn't be mad if Stewart won. I just don't want to see anyone get fired if they lose three in a row. So I'm going for the underdog on that one.
And Darren Stewart even said that he that eats up at him that he got the loss to Holland, and that's part of me is why I'm going with him. I feel like he's going to come out with extra aggression, knowing that he had that loss in September, and then he wants to fight back at it because he feel like he should have won there.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, if he would have won that fight, we're not talking about him to start a fight night. We're talking about him finishing a fight night with Brunson next week instead of Holland.
Exactly. But to move on to the second fight on the card, we have a flyweight matchup between Manel Capé versus Matthew Nicolai Ferreira, where we have Capé, who is 15-5 and is the -135 favorite. And then you got Matthew, who is the 15-3-1 record and then is the +115 underdog. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, this is another tough one. When it comes to this fight, this was an intriguing matchup for me. We talked about Cap a month ago for his matchup with Pantoja, and we saw how kind of disappointing that debut was, in my opinion, at least. I expect Cap A to have the jitters out of his system and be a little more aggressive than he was against Pantoja. He was 2-for-7 in takedowns and only threw 94 strikes throughout the entire fight, three rounds. If he wants to win, he needs to throw more because I don't think he's going to win the battle for takedowns. Nicolai comes into this matchup with 100% takedown defense. Now, we talked about Anders' last fight, 80%, right? You said if it's not 100, you know, that's the next best thing. This guy's coming with 100% takedown defense. So I expect Nicola to try and get the fight to the ground, but he'll need to be careful as Cap is pretty good in the ground too. He's got a lot of submission wins in his resume too, but I'm going to actually go again with the underdog. I'm going with Nicola via submission in second round.
True.
Yeah.
See, I got the opposite. But to start out, we got Matthew Nicolai Ferreira. He fights out of Team Nova Unai. And then you got Manel Capé. He's playing out of AKA Thailand. Matthew's fight resume includes 2 knockouts, 6 submission, and 7 decisions, above average takedown and submission defense. Just like you said, his takedown defense is top notch, and he's only been knocked out once. The big thing though with him is he hasn't fought in 2 years. But his big thing, he's a grappling specialist who can spit you at any time. That's what he prides himself on, is the grappling and the takedown. Whereas we got Manel Capé, who is coming into the second UFC fight out of Ryzen. His fighting resume is he's finished 13 opponents, 7 TKOs, wins, 4 submissions, and 2 decisions. He's prone to the submission. So this is a perfect fight for Nicolai in the sense that he's prone to submissions, but his strengths are in his hands. He's a striking, he's very strength in striking. And if you watch the third round of his first fight that we're critical of a couple months ago, you saw that he actually got going in the third round and he started to look better. He looked more comfortable in the octagon for the UFC. Like, he was getting a striking going, he was getting everything going. So I feel like he's going to continue that. And I actually have Manel Capé by first round knockout. I feel like he's more fresh fighter. He's motivated after his last fight. And then the last round of the last fight, he looked his best. Matthew hasn't fought in 2 years. I expect Capé to want to stay on his feet. He's going to do everything he can to stay on the feet and not on the ground. And his takedown defense is pretty good.
Yeah, he does have good defense.
So I feel like he's going to use that. He's going to keep the fight on the feet. Nicolai is not that bad with the striking, but I don't think it's like when he hits you, it's not as hard as when now Capé hits you. When Capé hits you, it's like getting hit with like a sledgehammer. Like, he hits hard. And I feel like he's going to be able to connect on a few of those because Nicolai is going to try and go for the takedown, and then he's going to use that to his advantage. He's going to kind of game plan Nicolai into going for the takedown, and he's going to hit him with a shot, and he's going to put him down. And I feel like it's going to be a first round knockout.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident about that one. So.
Yeah, well, we said that last time with Manel. But the thing about Manel, like, if it goes to decisions, at least in his last five, it's gone decision twice and he's lost. So it's that warm-up round that you were talking about in the beginning. If he's taking two rounds to warm up and it's getting to the third round to really find his footing, that's dangerous because this guy is going to wear him down. He's going to shoot for takedowns constantly, and it's you got to exert a lot of energy to stop somebody who's really good on the ground. So he's going to wear him down, and I hope to God that he does heat up and gets those jitters out in the first round instead of midway through the third where he can start throwing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But to move on to our third fight, which was a late add-on here in the last couple of days, we have a bantamweight matchup on this card between Jonathan Martinez, who is 13-3 and is the -310 favorite, versus Davy Grant, who is 12-4 and is the +250 underdog. How do you feel about this one?
Yeah, this is the classic tale of two different styles, right? Martinez is strong on his feet with 7 knockout wins, where Grant is a specialist on the ground with 8 submissions. I see Grant shooting for takedowns early, kind of like what you were saying previously, to exploit Martinez's 33% takedown defense. From there, I think it's going to be tough for Martinez. But if Martinez can keep the fight standing, it's a different story. Martinez should look to mix in leg and body kicks to keep, which could keep Grant from shooting, because you never want that knee to come in right when you're going for a shot. We've seen that happen many times before. This is a tough one. Martinez has been on a tear his last 5. He's been 4-1 with wins over Thomas Almeida, and then he's got wins over Liu and Wuji, Science. He's really doing well, whereas Grant's 3-2 with wins over Day Popov. He lost to Bermudez and Stasak by submission, but he's got a big win over Chito Vera, which is huge because Chito Vera is a proven fighter. With this one, I'm going to go with Davy Grant. Again, submission, second round. I didn't realize that I'm picking, so far, every single underdog. But I'm going with it. I'm going to ride with it.
Yeah. For me, this fight is like the ultimate bargains if you're like a better because of the numbers, and especially with Davy Grant, who's the +250 underdog. That I don't know how it's that high, but
is he taking it on short notice? Maybe that's what is depicting these numbers.
It could be. I would have to look into it. But first, we got Martinez. His fighting resume shows that he has 7 wins by knockout, 2 by submission, and 4 by decision. He also has 2 first round finishes by submission and 1 by knockout. He lands more than he absorbs strike wise and needs improvement on his defense. So, of course, Martinez is the a striking master, but he needs to learn to cover up and take less damage than he's doing. It's just like before, like you can be really good at striking, but when you're taking on more than you're putting out, that's not good. That means you're going to slow down eventually because you're taking too much punishment than you're putting out.
He keeps his hands low.
Yeah.
Like he carries his hands really low, and he does absorb a lot more than
a normal fighter. And then you got Davy Grant, whose resume shows that he has 2 wins by knockout, 8 by submission, and 2 by decision. So it's just like the opposite. He's a grappler. He also has 7 first-round finishes with a combined effort of knockouts and submission, so it's been like 50-50 with that. The big thing with him is he lands twice as much as he takes in damage. So even though he's not as poised as a striker, he puts out more strikes than he takes in. So obviously it shows that even if his defense isn't top notch, he knows how to make sure that he doesn't take in more than he puts out volume wise, which is complete opposite of Martinez. Yeah, like you would expect it to be the opposite, but being a grappler, that's a really good trait to have. And in this fight, he has above average defense, and he averages 3 takedowns a fight. So I expect in this fight, I pick Davy Grant. I have him by unanimous decision. I feel like he's going to control the fight. He's going to take down Martinez. And then he's going to do some punishment because of Martinez not being able to cover himself up. Like you said, he keeps his hands low, and it's going to leave his face for punishment, basically. I feel like what would keep him in it is maybe David Grant gets too strike happy, knowing that the face is going to be wide open, and he's gonna be like, "Oh, I gotta keep going after him," and it could be like, you know, Martinez might be able to use it as bait.
Yeah, it's kind of like what Aljamain Sterling did in his title fight against John, where he came out heavy and hard, kind of like, you know he was going to shoot for takedowns because he's strategically a wrestler, BJJ guy. And he goes out there and he just starts peppering in these shots. If Grant does that, you don't want to get to a point where you're gassed by round two and you can't shoot for those takedowns. That's what we saw with Aljo, how hard it was for him to get Jan down on the takedowns. I'm not saying that Jonathan Martinez is Peter Jan, because he's not. But I feel like if you're going to try and pepper in those punches, keep the pace something where you're comfortable that you don't exert so much energy, you can't get that takedown, because the takedown is the key to this fight, like you said. I think David Grant's just going to go in there maybe like half a minute into the fight, and he's going to go shoot for these takedowns.
Yeah, I think the difference, though, with that fight is Aljo was attacking the head.
Yeah.
When Jan was just going like this. Jan has basic defense like this.
Yeah.
He left his body wide open, and I thought Sterling should have attacked the body.
Because he was point fighting.
Yeah.
That's all he was doing. He was just trying to touch him and maintain control, because I don't know if he knew he could take those, get those takedowns. Because Jan proved that his takedown defense was phenomenal.
But all he had to do was attack the body.
Absolutely.
And then,
wear him down.
Because it was wide open. And once you attack the body, that's when Jan's going to go like this and go down, because he's going to have to protect the body at some point. And then that's when you hit the face.
Yeah.
And then it gets to the point where he's got to go like this the whole time. And then Sterling has him where he wants him, because he already attacked where he wasn't defending. And then he has to start attacking that, or he's going to take too much damage in the body, and that's going to slow him down. Yeah. I think that's where Sterling went wrong.
Yeah, it was like one of those game plans where you go in, come in hot, and you throw your opponent off because they think that you're going to shoot for a takedown. It's like Khabib coming in and strictly boxing and not shooting for a takedown till round three.
Yeah.
Like, your whole game plan is now catered to that takedown.
Yeah.
And when it's not coming, you don't know what to do, so you kind of throw your opponent off guard. It just happened that Aljo got gassed like midway through round two, because that was a crazy amount of energy. And he's got great cardio, but that was too much.
Yeah. But in this one, I see differently, because Grant is going to be more patient.
Yeah.
He's going to shoot for the takedowns, but he's not striking wise. He's not going to go crazy, like just attack like Barnstormer, like Sterling is. He's going to take his time. He's going to be efficient. He's going to move around. And then he's going to go for the takedowns, and I think he's going to get it, because I don't think Martinez is going to do a good job defending it. And then it's going to be all about how Martinez can get up from that and then get his striking going. Like,
he can
get him hit with a shot right to Grant, and then it could catch Grant, and then he could be done. But I feel like Grant's going to be patient. Yeah. And I feel like, even though he's the plus, was it 250? Like I said, I still favor Grant.
Yeah, I hope he wins, man. One of my underdogs has to win on this card, because I don't look like, you know, I know you look at the odds. I never look at the odds. I just go based off of my gut. And then I always find out that it's either all the underdogs.
Yeah, I try and do like a happy medium. I mostly base off of what I see, but then when I look at odds, I'm like, okay, why is it that low? And then I look into it, because usually the odds tell you something.
Yeah.
And then but I haven't seen anything on this, so I'm like, they might just be favoring because he's a striker who can finish. But then we know that a lot of guys can grind out strikers, and that works great.
Yeah.
But to move on to the fourth fight on the card, which is a featherweight matchup, which I'm looking forward to, which is between Dan Inge, who is 14-3 and is the -150 favorite, going up against Gavin Tucker, who is 13-1 and is the +125 underdog. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, this is my favorite fight on the card. I said the first fight was going to be fight of the night. This is very close to it, where it's a very intriguing fight because you have Dan Ige, who is an established fighter, coming off a huge loss to Calvin Kattar his last time out, and he's looking to bounce back to being more of a contender, where on the other side you have 13-1 Gavin Tucker coming in trying to get his name onto the list of contenders. Both of these guys are fine with going to a decision. We've seen that in the past. Out of his last five, four of Dan Ige's fights went to decisions, two splits, two unanimous, and Gavin Tucker, three of five went to hit to decisions for him as well. I'm thinking that it's going to be tough because both of them are really skilled on the ground and half of their wins are coming with submissions between the two of them. And I think that we're going to see a more aggressive Ige, who is going to mix in more takedowns, but feel comfortable on his feet. He's a very good striker, but throws a little more, shoots for a little more takedowns in normal fights. Whereas Tucker is going to shoot for more takedowns, try to wear Ige down, try to grind it out. And he's not going to throw as much. He's more of a counter striker, whereas Ige is a push the pace kind of guy. I'm actually going to pick the favorite with Dan Ige on this one. I know you're shocked because I've gone three underdogs back to back to back, but I'm going to go Ige with this one. But actually, I think that this is the closest fight. This could have been a pick 'em when it came to the odds because they're both so evenly matched and Tucker's just been on a roll. I wouldn't be surprised if Tucker inked this one out too.
Yeah. Well, first for me, we got Dan Ige who fights out Extreme Couture. And then you've got Gavin Tucker who fights out of Titans MMA. Dan Ige comes into in on a one-fight losing streak after getting beat by Calvin Kattar in the main event of their fight night that they had. Usually, he barely wins by decision. He has so-so takedown defense, and his striking defense is pretty decent. He averages one takedown a fight. He's going to want to stand up, keep the fight at a good pace and movement, and he's a striker, and he's going to try and control the fight his way. His defense on his feet is going to be key for him and allow Tucker to make mistakes and capitalize on them. Then you got Gavin Tucker, who comes in on a three-fight win streak. He is a southpaw, which is something you need to note, who averages four takedowns a fight and has above-average striking and striking defense. He's great takedown defense in all but one fight where he got taken down five times by a very good opponent. But he's going to look to make a name for himself in the division. This is his high-profile fight right now to date, whereas Ige's was the loss to Kattar. A big thing with Tucker is he does some of his best work in the clinch. He can change positions quickly on the canvas and is always looking – great, because his gas tank is top-notch. He has a really good gas tank, and then he can last all three rounds. And I don't think he's going to get outworked. I think he's going to be the one pushing the pace, keep it going. And the way I see this is like, I thought about Dan Ige first because of how he's going to try and control the fight, but I don't see him stopping the takedowns of Gavin Tucker. He averages, like I said, four to five takedowns a fight, which is crazy number. It's not Curtis Blades crazy, but
yeah,
it's for featherweight, it's really good. I feel like he's gonna get the takedowns often. It remains to be seen how Dan Ige can defend a takedown at a good rate, because Gavin Tucker's just gonna keep on coming. He's gonna keep coming with his gas tank. He's gonna attempt, I think, 5 to 10 takedowns, because he's gonna try and do that so he can wear out Ige and get him on the ground. And I see this being Gavin Tucker by a unanimous decision. I feel like he's gonna get the victory and move up.
Yeah, this is a tough one. This was a tough one to call. There's definitely a difference in level of competition between the two of them, where the last two fights for Ige was Calvin Kattar and Edson Barbosa, whereas for Gavin Tucker was Billy Quarantillo and Jaynes. So you do have a higher level of competition, but I'm still going to ride with Ige. But I wouldn't be surprised if Tucker got this, because he's a beast. He's an absolute beast.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think this has the ability to be a close fight.
Yeah,
I just feel like with how good of a takedown artist that Tucker is that it's going to be hard for Ige to keep defending it and keep defending it when he's not known for being a big takedown defense guy.
Yeah, and if Tucker gets your back, your neck's gone. Yeah, his rear naked choke is no joke.
Yep. But moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we got there pretty quickly, which is nice. We got a light heavyweight matchup between Misha Kirkunov, who is 15-5 and is the -130 favorite, versus Ryan Spann, who is 18-6 and is the +110 underdog. How do you feel about this fight?
Yeah, this is a very important fight for both of these guys in a very stacked division. They've both been sitting on the outside of the top 10 for some time now. Spann's coming off a round one loss to Johnny Walker, where Kirkunov is coming off a very impressive Peruvian necktie submission win over Jimmy Crute. So this is one fight that could continue a streak for Kirkunov or start a streak to getting the guys into the top 10. I think it's 11-13 right now, where Kirkunov is 11 and Ryan Spann is number 13 in the rankings. So for Spann, I think the key is establishing the pace, working in leg strikes to negate the takedowns, kind of like what Johnny Walker did in the Johnny Walker-Kirkunov fight. Whereas for Kirkunov, I can just see him shooting all day for these takedowns and trying to maintain control on the ground, kind of like what Jan did in the later rounds with his fight with Adesanya. But he has to be really careful because Spann has a ton of power and could drop in one shot. We've seen it in Dana White's Contender Series. We know how powerful Ryan Spann is. That S on his chest is because he's a man of power. So with this one, I'm actually again going with the favorite. I'm going with Kirkunov taking this fight via round two submission.
Yeah, yeah. And the way I see, from my side, the way I see this is we got Misha who fights out extreme couture, and then you got Ryan Spann who fights Fortis MMA. You got Kirkunov, whose fighting resume shows that he has 4 wins by knockout, 9 by submission, and 2 by decision. He also has 11 first-round finishes with a combination of knockouts and submissions. He tends to land twice as many strikes as he absorbs, which is perfect for a guy like him. And then he is top-notch with takedown defense, and then he averages a whopping 5 takedowns a fight, which is something in it. Whereas you got Ryan Spann, whose fighting resume shows that he has 4 wins by knockout, 11 by submission, and 3 by decision. He also has 13 first-round finishes with a combination of knockouts and submissions, which is 50-50. And then he's also 50-50 with striking and with putting out strikes and absorbing strikes. It's one, his ratio is 1-1. So for every one strike that he does, he takes in 1 strike. Mm-hmm. You want that to be a little bit better, but at least it's better. At least he's not taking in more strikes than he is putting out.
Yeah.
So at least it's 50-50. And then he needs improvement on his takedown defense, but he averages 1 takedown a fight. It's not his thing, but he's been able to get at least 1 a fight. The way I see his fight goes is I feel like it's hard to go against Misha Kirkunov because he averages 5 takedowns a fight. And how is Ryan Spann going to defend that? What is he going to do to stop that?
Yeah.
Because like you said, he hits hard. It's a Superman, but he's not known for striking. He's just known for getting that hit or two. But his underrated game is his grappling. That's the game that Ryan Spann is underrated at. But as a grappler, one of your worst enemies is a wrestler because they can combat that.
Yeah, and we haven't really seen Spann's grappling. I think the last time he got a submission win was against Devin Clark, I think, right?
Yeah.
Round two guillotine choke.
Yep. So it remains to be seen how he's going to interact with that and then go up against it. But I feel like he's going to have a hard time doing that. I feel like it's going to be Kirkunov all day. I think he's going to try and get the Spann's back, get the takedown. And then it's either going to be by a unanimous decision or I feel like it's going to be a third round submission.
So kind of like the Jimmy Crute fight, where he just wore him out. Like, I had Crute in that fight. I think Jimmy Crute's a beast, future champion. Yeah. Serkinov came in and was like, I'm the underdog. I'm just going to ride it out. And he dominated him and got that Peruvian necktie in round three. Yeah. Over under, do you think he shoots for five takedowns, or do you think he gets more than five takedowns in this fight?
He's going to shoot for seven. I think he's going to get three or four. Because okay. I think when he gets him down, he's going to keep him down.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
Yeah. And then just a note, both these guys have lost to Johnny Walker.
Yeah.
That's a common opponent that they both have.
Yeah.
And that shows how good Johnny Walker is, because he's in the top 10 now. And then
who is he fighting? Is he fighting Uzdemir?
Yeah, it's either Uzdemir or it's – who's fighting Anthony Smith? I think it might be
Jimmy Crute.
Jimmy Crute?
Yeah, that's gonna be a hell of a fight.
Maybe it's Otis Smear, because I don't see that, or he's not fighting anybody yet.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure we've talked about this division for a while, but I'm pretty sure he's matched up. Maybe Uzdemir isn't matched up. I don't know.
I know. I haven't seen anything with him.
Yeah, I forgot he was in the UFC.
Well, he's been inactive for a while, so.
Yeah, I don't know if he can get – he's in a country that's shut down, I believe, so there's no chance for him to get here.
Yep, but before we get moving to the main event, I just want to let everybody know this is going to be on YouTube, so if you can subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is at Cage My IQ. And then when we post this, if you could comment on the page, the question on YouTube that's going to be in the comment section will be, who will win the main event, Benir Muhammad or Leon Edwards, and why? So if you comment on that, let us know what you think, and then I will comment back to you guys as soon as I see the comment. But to move on to the main event, we got the main event, which is a 5-round welterweight matchup between Leon Edwards, who's 18-3 and is -270 favorite, versus Benir Muhammad, who is 18-3 as well, and is the +220 underdog. How do you see this going?
Yeah, this is a very tough one to pick. You remember when Leon Edwards was on Twitter and he was saying, I don't want to fight anybody with a number below mine. He wanted Usman. He wanted he wanted Colby. Then he was calling out Masvidal because it's a big money fight. Turned down Wonderboy, who was petitioning for a fight. And Wonderboy is only like 5 or 6 in the division. And then he was fighting Kazma, who was not ranked or at the top 15. Then you have
14.
And now Bilal's what, 13?
13.
Yeah, so he would have been fighting, more money fight if it were against Wonderboy. So it's funny how times change. This is a huge fight for both of these guys, though. You have Muhammad, who has been on a tear lately, 4-1 in his last 5, wins over Lima, Good, Sato, and Millender, all either first rounds or unanimous decisions. And then he's been active. That's the key. That's the key difference between these two fighters. They've been active. Whereas you have Edwards, who wants to remind people why he's ranked number 3 in such a stacked division, and also that his last loss came in 2015 to Kamaru Usman. That's a big thing to look at. But he also hasn't fought since July of 2019 because of his country being shut down. The way I see it, the outcome of this fight is going to be dependent on if ring rust is real. I know a lot of athletes don't believe in ring rust, and we kind of saw that with Connor versus Dustin, where he was gone for a while, living a whole different lifestyle, and he got caught. But then you see Dominic Cruz, who comes in after 2 years off every other year, and he comes back and ekes out wins. This is a more important fight for Edwards because he's putting his ranking on the line, where Muhammad has everything to gain. Edwards hasn't fought since 2019, like I said, and his country was shut down just like ours, but Muhammad was super active in 2020, and he was continuously fighting and putting his name on the line, asking people to remember the name, right? He's the only guy I know that when he wins a fight, he has sunglasses on in the ring, in the octagon, which I love. Bilal is also stepping up on short notice, which makes him the underdog, and Edwards was preparing for a totally different fighter on multiple occasions, his last one being Shimov. I see Muhammad being more aggressive and trying to take this to the ground, whereas Edwards is going to take some time to kind of reacclimate himself to the cage and the shorter cage too. He hasn't fought in that smaller apex cage yet. So all in all, when it comes down to picking the winner of this fight after this long rant I just went on, I'm actually going to go with the underdog. I'm going to stick with my trend. I have Muhammad winning by decision because he's way more familiar with that shorter cage as opposed to Leon Edwards.
Yeah, first off, before I go into my rant, as you see by the photo picture that I had in the beginning to promote this, I had it say Muhammad is coming, and then it's the preview. So that should just tell you where my head's at with this fight.
Yeah.
First off, I have Leon Edwards. He's fighting out of UTC Birmingham. And then you got Belair Muhammad, who's fighting out of Rufus Sport. You know, if you know anybody, anything about Rufus Sport, is that they're hard-nosed guys and they put work in.
Yeah, they got the best fighter in the UFC, CM Punk.
And then Showtime Pettis, who is the pride and joy of PFL now.
Yeah, Woodley was up there. Askren was up there.
Yep.
Yeah, they got good fighters out there in Wisconsin.
But stylistically, the fight presented, they're two guys that are remarkably similar, like in style, record, almost everything. Just personality wise, they're a little differently. They have just like I said, both men know what it takes to survive. They've both done a bunch of 15 minute fights without tiring out, and then they both done 25 minute work. Well, technically, Muhammad did one, and then Edwards has done two.
Yeah,
but Edwards is low volume. He has low volume but high takedown defense. He's a picky striker. He picks and chooses when he wants to do it. He makes sure that when he shoots for strikes that they count and then they're accurate. He has really good cardio, and in six fights, he's won six fights by knockout and three by decision. And his remaining nine, he's won by decision. His talent has been really good that he's fought. Just like you said, he lost to Usman, but he's fought several guys in the top 10. So he has that.
Yeah, he hasn't lost in 6 years.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he hasn't fought in 2 years. So
he also hasn't fought in 6 years. So it makes sense.
And then he's, just like I said, he's going to pick and choose his spots, and his accuracy is crazy. Then you got Belair Muhammad, who has won four by knockout, one by decision, and 13 by one by submission, and then 13 by decision. He has an astounding 86% takedown defense ratio and averages 3.0 takedowns per fight. The longer the fight goes, I feel like the better for Muhammad, because of the fight that he goes. And I feel like he's going to want to move the pace his way. He's a quick guy. Like you saw Sterling with how he's moving. Mm-hmm. It's going to be similar to that, but he's not going to be erratic. He's going to be more patient. He's going to push forward. He's going to make it his way instead of just waiting and seeing what Edwards does.
Yeah.
It's not going to let Edwards dictate anything. He's going to shorten the reach. He's going to get up close and then just go to town on Edwards, because Edwards is going to want it like a little bit of distance so he can analyze where he wants to shoot from. But if you don't have that much room between you two, you won't be able to kind of do that. And then I feel like you're going to see Muhammad shoot for the takedown. Even though Edwards is really good on the takedown, it remains to be seen how he does now because of the 2 year rest.
Yeah. Do you believe in ring rust?
I do, because there's a difference between training and then actually being in there and doing it against somebody you don't know. You're training with guys all the time that you know. So you know like their tendencies, you know what they do. It's easy to like train against somebody you know, but then when you get into like the matchup and somebody you don't know what the tendencies are, you don't know any of their things that they do. They could be a big takedown artist, and then they might decide, "Oh, I'm not going to do a takedown this fight."
Yeah, I feel like it was harder for Leon to get training sparring partners too, just because England was so strict with their COVID restrictions. Like if Leon Edwards had been fighting at least twice in 2020 or even once, I probably would have taken Leon Edwards in this, because he's got that knockout power. I think he's got one of the top five quickest, or top 10 quickest knockouts in UFC history. But it's for me, like I said, and I think you're going the same way, it's that inactivity period that I highly believe in. Like, I think that is a detriment to to fighters, because you're, like you said, you're not able to kind of strategically game plan for your opponent. And plus you're going, like, again, he was going up against Kazmat, right? Who yeah. is a whole different monster. Like, you're planning for a wrestler, but you not planning for Bilal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where Bilal's a little more disciplined than Hazmat.
Yeah. Like I said, I feel like this fight is tailor-made for a decision. I don't think anybody... I think either there's outside, like, a 10% chance Bonilla and Muhammad could win by knockout in the first two rounds. If not, I feel like he's going to win by decision. It's not that I don't think that Edwards is good. He's number three ranked for a reason.
Absolutely.
I just feel like with the 2 years off, plus the fact that Muhammad has been very active, he's had four fights in the past year, and he's been 3-1. And then the last fight he had, I think it was a month and a half ago, he looked really solid.
Yeah.
Like, he got stronger as the fight got on. He was able to get a couple of takedowns. He was showing his striking. He's motivated.
I think he fought like 3 weeks ago.
Maybe it was 3 weeks ago. I don't know. Like,
I think I'm pretty sure he fought maybe on 258. I think he fought on 258. He's been super active. His first submission victory came against Sato in Fight Island this year, this past year.
Yeah.
Got that rear naked choke.
But and then he came out and said, like, he wants this because he feels. Right now, Dana was like, Leon Edwards, if you get this win by a good margin, then he's the next in line for a title shot.
Do you believe that?
I believe it.
Okay.
Because, but then I feel like that should motivate Muhammad with how Muhammad's doing.
Yeah, I don't believe it. I don't think he's next in line. Like, I was going to ask you what you thought was next for Edwards.
Who's going to be next then?
Colby.
Yeah, but Colby's inactive.
Yeah, so is Kamaru at this point. So you're going to – their weight – so you and I have talked about this on text for a while now. Tough and the Ultimate Fighter is coming out in the summer, and we know it's going to be welterweights. A lot of people were thinking it was going to be Usman Masvidal or Usman Covington or Masvidal Covington. I think Usman and Covington makes the most sense. They're both polarizing figures in MMA, and they both are great personalities. So if you bring them both in there – that's television gold. I think if Leon wins this, he's gonna get Masvidal for maybe a number one contenders match.
I don't know why that they favor Masvidal so much, because he's coming on a loss. So there was talks that he's gonna get a rematch. He didn't look good at all. I don't care if he took it on short notice or not. I didn't think he earned it to begin with. It was Burns, and then he was just taking it because of a replacement.
Yeah, it's a money fight, though.
And then they were like, well, Covington didn't take it. Well, Covington had a fight booked with Woodley at the moment, so they didn't allow him to take it. And then Woodley has fought since he lost. He dominated Woodley, and he's been sitting since. He wants that fight.
Yeah.
If that's what he wants. He deserves that title fight after picking up a win.
Yeah,
He shouldn't need two wins, whereas Masvidal, all he needs is the weight. That makes no sense.
I think it just goes down to what's going to bring the company more money. And if you look at, like, pay-per-view buying fans that are, we're going to say casual, let's put air quotes out, right? Because I don't want to offend anybody. More people know Masvidal than they know Edwards.
Yeah, but they know him because of a flying knee that he did in an open fight. But since then, he's lost.
But what would you rather see if you're a casual fan? Would you rather see the potential of? I know, me too. I would rather see if I'm taking them out. I would if it's Edwards and Masvidal getting the next shot. Yeah. I would rather see a potential of a flying knee as a casual fan than a 5 year, 6 year fight in the making with Edwards and Usman. I think Edwards earned it. If he wins this, he's earned it 100%. And if he doesn't get the next shot at it, he shouldn't get Masvidal. He should get Gilbert Burns.
The problem, though, with that is Masvidal is a 500 fighter, basically.
Yeah.
He was nothing until the flying knee, and then he gets a flying knee, and all of a sudden he's big and bad and whatnot because he connects on the flying knee, and then he beats overrated Nate Diaz out of his division.
Yeah.
And then he got dismantled by Usman.
Yeah, it's all about money, though.
Whereas Covington was winning against Usman four rounds to three rounds to one, and then fought with the broken
jaw,
and then lost in the last round.
Yeah, I mean,
I feel like Masvidal is all talk, and he needs to prove himself first.
Yeah, I mean, he keeps saying he wants to stay active, but then it's like, I want to fight for the title, and I don't blame him. You know, he's an older fighter.
Since July, it's almost 8 months.
Yeah, but so, you know, I think that he's still trying to get that payday because he feels he earns it. Honestly, I'd like to see Wonderboy up there too in the talks. He's never getting any talk.
Yeah, he just won. He's ranked number 5 now.
Yeah. And he's the only one who hasn't fought Usman in the top 5.
Yeah, in the top 5, yeah.
Yeah.
But what happened? But then you get to talk, and like they said, what if Belir Muhammad dominates Edwards and wins in great fashion, even though he's 13, where does that leave him?
So if you're the matchmaker, what would you do with Belir Muhammad if he wins?
Obviously, you would have to have him go into the top 5 because he would just beat a top 3 guy because Edwards is at number 3. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the Ultimate Fighter will be Usman and Masvidal. Let's just say that.
Okay.
Right now, that they there's a matchup that presents good if Muhammad were to win would be Muhammad and Covington because they said that Muhammad said that if he saw Covington, he would knock him out.
Yeah.
So that's where I would lean towards. Okay. Would be because I think it's going to be Masvidal and Usman.
Okay.
Yeah, but say if they pull out and say, oh, it's Usman and Covington, then you just go, okay, let's book Muhammad and Masvidal.
Okay. What happens with Burns?
Well,
because he's still number 1, right?
Burns is number 2.
Okay.
So no, actually, yeah, he's number 1 or 2, and then Covington's 1, and then Burns is number 2 now.
So would you give Burns someone like Chiesa or Wonderboy?
I would give him Wonderboy.
Okay, so maybe Belal.
Because if you look at it, Covington lost, and then he had to beat Woodley, and Woodley at the time was 4 or 5.
Yeah, he's 6 now, right?
Yeah, he's 6. Yeah. So you get him that fight to just like it would essentially be like a tune-up for Burns.
Yeah, and I don't think Belal would fight Woodley, their training partners at Rufus Sport. Yeah.
It make no sense with Woodley being 6 or 7 now.
Yeah, but still,
he moved all the way up.
Depends on how active he wants to stay. Yeah. If he makes top 5, maybe he fights Chiesa next.
But then,
or somebody like that.
Just like that, we don't know. We could have Muhammad win, and then he would fight, like you said, Chiesa or Wonderboy.
Yeah. Or you could just fight the champ. Who the hell knows?
Yeah. You could do whatever. But it depends on the outcome of this fight, which I think it's Muhammad. But everybody tuning in, just let me know who you like. Comment in the comment section on YouTube for this video. Let us know. We'll get back to you. I want to hear everybody's different opinions. But that is the end of the UFC Vegas 21 preview. Definitely looking forward to this fight card. It is this Saturday at 8 o'clock Eastern time, which is the start time for the main card. I only assume that the prelims will start at like 6 o'clock or so. Check out all of them. You can check us out for the recap show this Monday at 8:30 Eastern time on Facebook, YouTube, and now Twitch. So check us out then. And then also check out Active Geek every Wednesday when they release their weekly episode, and then starting next Saturday, you can check out their weekly review, just like they did with Wanda Watch. They'll be doing Saturdays with Sam and Bucky.
Yes, sir.
Every Saturday, where they review the Falcon and Winter Soldier every week, where they'll get their review, check out Easter eggs in the episodes, and just give their opinions of it. So check that out on all the audio podcast sites, Apple, all of them. Check that out at The Active Geek. And then you have anything else to say before you get ready to go?
No, man. I'm expecting a big fight. I'm excited. And I know I won't be back here next week, but I'm looking forward to that fight as well between Brunson and Holland.
Exactly. And then just like that, next week I'll be joined by Jay Henry, aka MMA Drunkie. He's a new podcaster that's getting a podcast started. I'm going to have him on here to get his feet wet while right now he's creating his podcast and he's getting it off his feet with all the social medias. I'll have him on here instead of Jim to preview UFC Vegas 22. But then don't be crazy. Jim will be back on in a few weeks for the next fight night card, which is going to be good. Yeah. But other than that, I am D-Bake. This is my co-host, Jim. And we will talk to you guys later.
Yep. See ya. Thank you.
Thank you for watching this episode of Cage My IQ on the Sports Box. Please remember to follow us on all of our social media outlets. On Facebook at Sports Box Show, Twitter at Sports Box Show, Instagram at The Sports Box Show. Find us on YouTube and join Outside the Box, our Facebook sports discussion group. The Sports Box is brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And also our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and use promo code THEBOX at sign up for 10 free points. Thank you for joining us.